This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people. We acknowledge them as traditional owners and pay respects to elders past and present. After the incredible success of our first few years competing, things started to feel a little precarious as the 2010s came to a close.
Europe was giving us little love in the public vote, and Aussie fans were looking for something to turn things around.
In this episode, we run through the last 5 years of Australia's participation, from the dizzy heights of Kate Miller Heike to how that pesky pandemic threatened our participation.
And yes, people, we're finally going to wrap things up and answer the question that we've been looking into. Welcome to the third and final episode of Why is Australia in Eurovision?
It's 2018, we've had those low public scores, and there's a bubbling feeling from fans here that Europe just doesn't like us. But how real was that concern? We need a voice of reason. Let's hear from Dr. Jess.
Once you come second in Eurovision, the expectations are incredibly high. And although both Jess and Isaiah are incredibly talented artists, there may have been a bit of a mismatch in terms of them in the song, and there may have been a bit of a mismatch in terms of the staging. So I think above all, we need to remember that Eurovision is a television show, and it's also a live performance. If you don't nail the live performance and you don't nail the good TV, then that is going to affect your vote. It didn't necessarily represent a sign that the rest of Europe didn't want Australia there. It just represented a sign that maybe the acts that we were sending weren't as fresh as they needed to be in order to perform well in an incredibly competitive contest.
What we needed was a change. We needed something new to reinvigorate fans at home and take something different to the contest. Then came the announcement of Eurovision Australia Decides.
We know that Australians love Eurovision. Now Australian fans will be able to make their mark.
Look, it's the next logical step, and it's a very exciting one.
SBS and Tourism Events Queensland today launched Eurovision Australia Decides, a live contest open to songwriters in which a jury and the public will vote for their favourite performer.
Put songs together that are a bit dangerous, a bit dramatic, a bit audacious, ambitious. We're looking for that because they're the songs that win Eurovision.
That was Paul Clark, who you've heard in the first two episodes. He tells us why the introduction of Australia Decides was important.
SBS is a network set up to really champion diversity in Australia, and this was a really great opportunity to show that. It was a great show to be able to make, and it meant that you could really think about what you were going to do in terms of staging. You had a chance to road test it. It just meant that you could try and build something for Australian fans that were Eurovision fans.
What was also important in the announcement of Australia Decides is that we secured a 5-year deal with the EBU to stay at Eurovision, so fans could rest easy knowing we had a semi-permanent place. This really felt like Australia had become a real Eurovision nation. For the first time, we were going to have a national selection show, something other nations had been having for years.
It also gave an opportunity for Aussie fans to come together in the one place to party and celebrate Eurovision. We had friends come from all over Australia, and we all had our personal favourites of who we wanted to win.
The likes of Kate Miller-Heidke, Shepherd and Courtney Act were household names, and notably, one of the acts competing was Australia's 2024 artist, Electric Field.
On the ground, you could feel the desire by fans to send something dangerous and different, and not the usual polished pop that we had sent in previous years. While we had multiple songs worthy of the Eurovision stage, Australia took a risk with Kate Miller-Heidke's operatic-infused song Zero Gravity winning the ticket to Tel Aviv.
Song 9, Zero Gravity, with 87 points, is our winner!
Kate Miller-Heidke will be representing Australia in Eurovision 2019 in Tel Aviv.
Why did Australia choose Kate? Here's Dr. Jess.
Part of the appeal of Kate Miller-Heidke's song was the performance. And I know it was escalated on the actual Eurovision stage, but even just in Australia Decides, where we first got this sense of her floating above the audience and in the kind of ethereal cosmos that Kate Miller-Heidke kind of belongs in, you know, there was a novelty factor to it that was still incredibly artistic. But what's also important to remember about that initial Australia Decides was it was close between her and Electric Fields. And Electric Fields also didn't fit that mold. And when you look at who was performing in that initial Australia Decides, and even the ones that came after it, we liked the pop songs, but we tended to be drawn to the things that were a little bit different. And even though pop music is quite popular in Australia, we do also have a very strong kind of indie streak, where people like Kate Miller-Heidke and Electric Fields and various other artists such as Montaigne all belong. So Australia, I think, was so excited at the prospect of choosing something that we loved already, that we had actually chosen that and that we could get behind.
That excitement went to the next level when we saw Kate's performance at Eurovision. She and the team delivered one of the most stunning stage concepts of all time. Up on that pole, swinging around, singing opera at that level was literally out of this world. She would go on to finish in 9th place.
She was robbed, by the way. The change in selection method to Australia Decides was a success. This was all just about Aussies loving the contest and doing well again, wasn't it?
Not quite. Also attached to that 5-year deal on the Gold Coast was delivering a Eurovision Asia that was planned to take place there. Here's Paul.
They were really interested in seeing the Eurovision brand grow into other parts of the world. And I made a promise to Jonola that if we built Eurovision a bridge to Asia, that they would build a bridge for us into Eurovision and Europe. And that's sort of what we're still following through.
There's that man again, Jonola Sand. He had eyes on using Australia Decides as a way to build towards Eurovision Asia.
Our geographic location helped us first get into the contest in 2015, and now it was helping us secure a semi-permanent position. He visited the Gold Coast for Australia Decides 2020 and received a hero's welcome by local fans.
Give it up for Mr. Jon Olesund!
But the world was about to change with the COVID pandemic, and it would halt Eurovision and the progress of the contest in Australia and Asia.
It is with great regret we have to announce the cancellation of the Eurovision Song Contest 2020 in Rotterdam. The escalating spread of the coronavirus throughout Europe and the restrictions put in place by many governments and the Dutch authorities makes it impossible for us to host a live event as planned.
The pandemic and the cancellation of the 2020 contest wasn't just crushing for fans and artists. It would have long-lasting impacts. Montaigne, who had won Australia Decides in 2020, missed out on competing due to the cancellation, but was internally selected by SBS to perform the following year. But with the pandemic still lingering a year later, there would be a catch.
Ooh, about that.
Remember 7 years ago when we said we wanted to be a part of Eurovision?
We remember. You kept hassling us until we said yes.
Well, we need to bother you about something else. Miss, take it away.
Look, there's no easy way to say this, so Joel's going to say this.
Well, Australia is sorry to say.
We can't make it to the Netherlands for Eurovision this year.
Yeah, we really want to be there, but you know, we can't leave the island.
It was disappointing to see Australia forced to perform remotely. Unfortunately, there was some backlash from fans here and in Europe about not travelling to Rotterdam. Here's Dr. Jess's take.
I think it's kind of unfair to say that Australia wasn't taking it seriously when we're in the middle of a pandemic. It was a strong ethical decision that Australia made not to travel to Europe to perform. Even though a lot of those restrictions had been raised at that time, it's still a huge risk at that point in 2021 for people to be traveling overseas.
Montaigne performed her 2021 entry Technicolor from a studio in Sydney, making Australia the first country to ever compete in the competition without physically attending.
However, competing remotely meant qualifying for the grand final was an uphill battle, and we didn't progress past the semi-finals for the first time. Looking back, this was totally understandable. As much as the producers tried to integrate Australia's performance into the semi-final as smoothly as possible, it was very noticeable that we weren't performing in Rotterdam, and perhaps we were somewhat punished for it.
A level of normality returned in 2022, with Australia decides making a comeback. Even with some restrictions in place, it was still an incredible weekend.
After a year of most of us not being able to travel, even across state borders within Australia, it was great for fans to converge on the Gold Coast and reconnect after such a difficult year. Vocal powerhouse and longtime Eurovision fan Sheldon Riley won the competition and secured his ticket to Turin.
Turin was the first Eurovision for us to in 4 years. It was amazing to be back at the contest and in that arena. There were still restrictions, and as fans in the contest slowly made its way back, so did Australia. Many fans travelled over to Italy, and Sheldon Riley's powerful voice and his song Not The Same took us back to the grand final, where, let's face it, Australia belongs.
After a fantastic performance, Sheldon finished 15th on the night. However, a familiar issue did return: a low score from the public vote. With only 1 year left on our initial 5-year contract, the same concerns resurfaced. Paul puts a lot of this period down to a post-pandemic hangover, not just for Australia, but for Eurovision in general.
I think it's like a pendulum that the pandemic really threw things sideways. It's not a show like Married at First Sight, where it has this massive marketing campaign behind it and this kind of car crash television. You know, it's much different than that. It's something that kind of grows out of a much different set of values. And, you know, there are some car crashes in Eurovision, and they're really fun to watch. You know, like, there are those moments. You know, Madonna on stage in Tel Aviv for me is one of the great ones. But what I think you'll find is that because of the scale of the show and because of the beliefs behind the event, it will always just find a bigger and bigger audience. Like, it sort of stalled a little bit in Australia for a couple of years. It came back in a big way last year. And I think that's a lot due to Voyager and them being such a popular and brilliant. The spirit of generosity of that band was extraordinary.
In 2023, SBS selected Voyager, an independent prog metal band from Perth, Western Australia. This was not the type of act who normally put their hand up to do something like Eurovision. And for Australia, this was a complete departure from what we had previously seen.
So why were they the right fit? It has a lot to do with frontman Denny Esrin's own Eurovision journey. We spoke to him to find out more.
My love of the contest really dates back to my early days growing up in Germany. We migrated to Australia in 1992, so really from 81 to 92, there was a lot of that sort of Eurovision sensibility in there. And that really shaped my love for melody and just a really good pop song. Even though I later ventured, obviously, into, you know, the dark and indecipherable world of dark and black metal. Having come to Australia, you know, obviously that's something that sort of probably waned a little bit as I was trying to integrate into an Australian way of life, having spoken no English or anything like that. So, but then uni days, again, the Eurovision parties were strong. I mean, people really went all out and they just really committed. I remember just every year there were drinking games and all sorts of things that were pure net positive.
Danny's experience is a story that would resonate with a lot of Australians, from migrant beginnings to those wild and messy viewing parties that we can all relate to. But it's one thing to be a fan, another to get into the competition. With Australia's arrival, they saw an opportunity.
Seeing Lordi do it, we're like, okay, maybe anyone can do Eurovision if they've got what it takes. Sometimes, you know, maybe even not. And thus, I guess, was born the idea of hashtag Voyager for Eurovision.
From that point on, the band were knocking on SBS's door trying to get selected for Eurovision. But it wasn't until the introduction of Australia Decides that they started to gather momentum.
So we thought, all right, well, Australia's doing Australia Decides. We've got this wonderful track called Runaway, and it's a real pop banger. And so Runaway was shortlisted for Eurovision Australia Decides. And Ash, the drummer, and I took the initiative to go to the Gold Coast. And there was a brief interlude where they'd screened part of the song, you know, those who almost made it, and Joel Creasy, you know, made the announcement. And there we were, and we started getting some looks from the audience. We were like, oh, there's those guys. So we really, I guess, were so keen to pursue this idea because we knew that we had what it took. And afterwards, I recall being at various venues for after parties, and you just got to meet the right people and you've got to get in front of them and go, let's make this happen. Obviously, one of those people was Paul Clark. And I think Paul was just really impressed that these guys had come over from Western Australia, and somehow we managed to sneak our way into the VIP area and just have a yarn with him after my brief encounter with Mons, who was also there. So, you know, I was torn between Paul and Mons, but ended up chatting to Paul, which I think was probably a good idea in hindsight. But I remember Paul saying the words, let's work together. And I could see that Paul really understood, and we really had a connection, because I think Voyage is one of those bands that are not only musicians, but also friends, and we are extremely hardworking. And I think the attitude that we had was like, all right, these guys are something.
Well, it sounds like Danny and Ash knew how to schmooze. To ignore the 2015 Eurovision winner and talk to Paul Clark was clearly a wise choice.
Well, it certainly paid off, because when Australia Decides returned in 2022, Voyager were there with the song Dreamer. The entry was a real fan favourite and won the public vote. They didn't do as well in the jury and finished runner-up overall.
The jury said no, but the people said yes. And the overwhelming response of not only our state, but also Australia behind this band who was really just the underdogs. What it meant was that us coming second meant that we were the underdogs, and Australians love an underdog. But it was not meant to be. And in some ways, I think that's okay. I mean, Sheldon did a stellar job. His song was great. His performance was incredible. And in some ways, it was kind of good that we didn't get in, because we had just taken it as far as we possibly could.
Although they didn't get the ticket to Turin, they didn't have to wait long for their Eurovision opportunity. The very next year, they were selected as Australia's Artist for Liverpool with the song Promise. Cross my heart until the sky turns red in the sunrise. Since you told me everything's all right. Oh, 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 oh.
Since you told me everything's all right. Now, when we got the call and we had to keep it a secret, that was very difficult. It was just such a great time because we were so into what we were doing, and we had this massive goal, and it was almost uncanny that a Perth progressive pop metal band was going to Eurovision to represent Australia. And to me particularly, it meant a lot. You know, as a little German boy who came to Australia not speaking a word of English, now being able to represent a country that has given me so much. Once we were announced, the response from particularly the Australian audiences was just phenomenal. I mean, we threw ourselves into it 100%. We did something insane, like 660 interviews or something like that. And it's because we just enjoyed every single moment. All of a sudden, we're being carted around. We just said yes to everything. You know, why wouldn't you want to be on the Today Show with Karl Stefanovic, you know, doing growls and talking about heavy metal? Why wouldn't you want to be on the project? Why wouldn't you be on all the networks? You know, this is the chance. This, you only get one chance. I mean, some get two, but you know, this is the time where you can absolutely shine, because this is a massive gift that's given to you, and we certainly didn't want to blow it, and I don't think we did.
That hard work was really paying off. In our time covering the contest, I don't think I've seen an act create that much buzz at home before heading over. Australian fans were right behind them. It's one thing for us to love them, but what would the Europeans make of them?
Our presence at Eurovision, I felt, was an interesting one, because when we got there, it was clear that Australia was seen as a friendly nation where people were very excited to host us there and have us there. And I think people don't perceive us as a real threat, which is problematic given that Dami In came second. So it's just this nice way to be able to cruise along and be friends with everyone. It's a quintessentially Australian way. And that's, I think, what we embraced. At the same time, there was a real danger of Australia not continuing in the contest. And obviously, we had a lot of questions about that, because we were really the last act under the current or the then current contractual arrangements. So there was this weird kind of air of, will you be back in the contest? And we couldn't really say anything because we just didn't know. So the jokes, I guess, that we made were, well, we know we better bring it, otherwise we're out.
Well, Voyager did bring it. They won their 100% public vote semi-final. the first time an Australian act had won a public vote at the contest. In the grand final, they then went on to deliver another top 10 result for Australia, a fifth in 8 appearances.
Dale, some nations can only dream of a record like that. An excellent performance and another top 10 result went down very well back home.
And I don't want to speak out of line here, but I do think that we brought the joy and the love and the enthusiasm and we just dragged everyone with us, that I think to some degree, and this is not just my words, this is what I've been told, you know, there was a reignition of the love for Eurovision in Australia. You know, I don't want to say that we are, you know, entirely responsible for Australia continuing to be in the contest, but I think we had some clout and some play because I think people really enjoyed us being there and we really enjoyed being there. So it's just one of those things that I think when you make an experience 99% positive and you do absolutely everything, you're just really lapping it up. You just drag people with you and the enthusiasm is absolutely infectious. And I think we brought that.
Even with the success of Voyager, our 5-year contract was now up and most Aussie fans were convinced that we wouldn't be invited back. Dr. Jess explores the psyche behind that.
I think Australia still has a little bit of imposter syndrome when it comes to Eurovision, where in terms of the quality of the artists that we've sent, the quality of the songs that we've sent, and the love that audiences have for the contest, we still kind of feel like maybe we shouldn't be there. Maybe we don't quite belong, that our belonging in the contest is kind of precarious. And that's a really difficult thing to navigate and to address. And I think the only way that you can get past imposter syndrome is by keeping on at it.
Well, Australia will be keeping on at it, as Electric Fields will be representing Australia, thanks to receiving another invitation to participate, thanks to our very good friends, The Sweet.
Perhaps it's not just our relationships that's keeping us there, though. The overall Eurovision landscape has changed since we first joined. The first few years we competed, there were up to 43 nations taking part. This year, there will be just 37. Here's Dr. Jess to explore why this works for Australia.
I think it helps Australia's case to say because it's a bum on the seat. And the contest at the moment, particularly over the past couple of years with things like the pandemic, with things like an absolute mess of a global economy, and of course, the conflicts in Russia, Ukraine, Israel, and Gaza, makes it more difficult to maintain the contest as it was. Many broadcasters just can't participate for political or economic reasons. So the more people that you can keep in that fold, the better it is for the EBU. They need people invested in this song contest in order for it to keep on running. So Australia becomes a really important participant in that because it shows that there are kind of still legs, that they are still invested in it.
Okay, so here we are. That takes us right up to the present day.
Well, Dale, I guess we better get around to answering that pesky question.
Well, before we tackle it, let's hear what our guests had to say when we asked them, why is Australia in Eurovision? Let's start with Dami.
You're not the first person to ask this, I'm sorry. Because Eurovision is awesome, because it's life-changing, it's so fun. Why wouldn't we be in it? Why wouldn't we? Like, what are we going to lose?
Yeah, I like the enthusiasm, but I'm not sure that really nailed it, Dummy. Let's maybe try Danny.
The number of questions about why is Australia in Eurovision, I mean, you get them, you get the odd question here and there, but generally people are quite educated. Like, I think people generally understand. There's a few trolls, obviously, who still go, oh, why are you here type of thing. It's like, well, because we want to be and we do a damn good job. And why shouldn't we be here? We're really good and we add something to the whole contest that is unique and is just another level of excitement. And I don't know, I think those questions are probably, they're very 2016, you know, why is Australia in Eurovision? I think people have gotten used to it.
Well, Danny doesn't even feel like it's a question worth answering, it seems. Maybe let's see what Dr. Jess has to say.
At the time that we first entered Eurovision, I repeated the same story that still gets repeated to this day of, we're a migrant nation with a lot of European migrants and we've loved Eurovision for a really long time and that's why we're part of the song contest. And that turned out to not be the whole story once I dug into it a little bit deeper. Australia is in Eurovision for very practical reasons and that is the expansion of the song contest globally. So when Australia was invited you know, it's not just because we had lots of people who love Eurovision. It's not just because we're a multicultural country with connections back to Europe. It was part of a very clear plan to establish Australia as a site where something like Eurovision can happen. So inviting Australia to be part of that was a key strategy. So it's not just about our affection for it. It's a commercial plan. It's a corporate plan. It's a broadcaster's plan. And you kind of can't hate them for it.
Now, I'm not disagreeing with any of that, but that was quite a sobering analysis by Dr. Jess. Surely there's got to be a bit more to it than corporate grand plans.
Why is Australia in Eurovision? I think because we all kind of wanted it so much. I think you're just really trying to plug into a zeitgeist thing of what are we missing? And I think we were missing being part of that. And I'm really pleased to have been part of that.
Well, I guess that comes back to us now, Mike. Why is Australia in Eurovision?
It's apparent there's not one singular reason. Everything we've covered in these three episodes explains why.
All right, let's go through the key reasons of how we earned our spot. We had that mass migration of Europeans to Australia. That led to SBS starting the broadcast for that audience, and they have done each and every year since 1983. That is huge, Mike. No other country outside of Europe comes close to that commitment. It grew over time to reach a mainstream audience who then wanted to engage with the contest and not just observe it. We then took a crack team over there and showcased our passion on screen and through that interval act in 2014.
All these played a part, but as we discovered, there were other factors at play. The EBU's ambition to take the contest more globally, particularly into Asia, was a key driver. Behind the scenes, we successfully navigated the political backdrop of the contest. And there is obvious commercial opportunities with Australia's involvement.
But all of that only got us in the door. We can't undersell the quality Australia delivered and the impact we had on the contest. Every time we had a slight dip, we always bounced back to deliver something new and exciting. And maybe we've also had some lucky breaks along the way. Sweden winning when they did, and even other countries pulling out has helped our cause.
All these elements have been important at different times, but there's one constant, and that's our overwhelming passion for the contest and our hunger to be involved.
We always think Australia being part of Eurovision is the decision of faceless Europeans on the other side of the world. Of course, I've had a role to play, but ultimately we made it happen. And our future in Eurovision rests in our own hands. At least for now.
Thank you everyone for listening and coming along on this journey with us. We'd especially like to thank our guests, Associate Professor Jess Carneal, Blink TV Director Paul Clark, and our amazing Eurovision artists, Dami Im and Danny Estrin from Voyager.
Thank you all again, and enjoy Eurovision this year and beyond.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Dale. This podcast was created by us for SBS Audio, with additional mixing by Max Gosford. Catch all the action from Eurovision 2024 on SBS On Demand, live streams, replays, official music videos, behind-the-scenes extras, and more.